again, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Financial 15. This is the podcast where we try to answer your questions in roughly 15 minutes. And we don't include the friendly back and forth banter in that timing, so don't come at us because our podcasts average about 25 minutes, okay? It's the answers are about 15 minutes. Now, as always, I'm here with Senior Portfolio Manager and Senior Wealth Advisor, Stephen Biddle. Say hi, Stephen.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, or whatever it is, but welcome to our podcast.
Yes, welcome. And of course, I'm your host, Ashley. We record these episodes on a monthly basis, and we cover a plethora of financial topics, from things like what's an RSP, to philanthropic giving, to estate planning. And today we're going to continue our multi-episode topic today, which is financial planning. Now, we're lucky again to have Sean Harding back today. Sean is our senior wealth planning consultant, a gentleman and a scholar, a modest expert in the world of financial planning. Hello again, Sean. It's very nice to see you.
Hello, everyone.
See, very modest. Look how he just laughs.
Yeah, I'm like eye roll.
All right. Well, again, we record these episodes on a monthly basis. You can find all of them on our website, and that's at www.biddlejohnstonwmteam.ca. It's under our newsletters, podcast, and videos tab. And any questions, any comments, any topics you might want to cover, or if you'd like us to reach out to Sean for you, you can send me any of that to my email, and that's at ashley.nichols@nbpcd.com. So, in the last two episodes, we really did cover a lot of topics and questions with financial planning. You know, topics like what are some of the biggest planning mistakes we can make and how in depth does a plan need to be? But even with all of the information that we've covered, we've really only scratched the surface when it comes to all of the different avenues of financial planning. And it's very helpful to have a professional at your side. And that being said, if you have any questions, like I said, for Sean, listen to these episodes and get back to me there at my email, and we'll be happy to answer them for you. So, Stephen, I could interject a little bit here a bit more today, because we are going to gear this episode more around those who haven't quite built their wealth yet. And let's admit it, that mainly consists of us millennials, the Gen Zers, and like the young Gen Xers, the ones who wish they were millennials but didn't quite make the cut. So, I might have a few more questions for Sean on this one than you, but we'll let you at least ask the questions, because we don't want you to be quiet the whole time. I know it's hard for you, so
it is difficult. Yeah, and I'm actually being quiet because, you know, I just kind of had that intro that said I was senior portfolio manager, and Sean has this gentleman scholar and expert in his, so a little bit. Howdy over that.
Yeah, Stephen's just the chatterbox, guys. We all know this. We
exactly.
know this.
anyway, enough of you, Ashley, for right now. Anyway, so one thing that's interesting before we get onto this, like as she's talking about for millennials and Gen Xers, you know, they're in a really different position for where a lot of the older people was. You know, if you take a look at studies, they're literally 40% behind in wealth generation. Right. You know, they don't have homes, they can't afford homes, and financial planning is getting harder. And I think in some of the generation, you know, Xers and Zers or Zers, whichever side of the border you're on, you know, I think some of them have kind of almost given up on the whole financial saving thing. Like, just, I'm just going to spend because, like, why bother? So, you know, what we kind of thought we'd come up with some questions maybe to give, or answers to give them some hope as well. But, you know, why don't we kind of start with the bigger picture, Sean? Like, you know, when you're building your net worth, you know, we can look at things like savings versus debt reduction, which one is better there, or, you know, cash flow and budgeting, and why it's getting a good handle on your cash flows is really the cornerstone of financial planning. I'll let maybe start with that question first.
The big, I guess the big equation that everyone kind of needs to get a handle on or grasp is money in and your money out. The money in coming into your household should be at least the same as money out, if not bigger. That's really kind of the ratio that we have to kind of look at, because for planning purposes, I need to see some kind of a surplus. It's what we work with. right? So two ways of looking at it. One is you reduce your costs, right? So the money outside of things, or we have to increase the money in. So it's really the broad kind of equation that we kind of have to work with. So on the money inside, all right, so is it a question of getting a side hustle? Is it a question of getting a better job? Is it a question of going back and re-educating yourself? Okay, that's a different topic. But then we're looking at the money in equation. The money out equation, that's the one everyone grapples with. Regardless of generation, everyone grapples with this one, is how to track your spending, right? Without actually tying yourself to a budget and having a spreadsheet that you're filling in week to week or month to month. Fact is there's some really good software out there. Right off the banking websites now, right? You can actually go to your online banking and you can see they're analyzing your spending, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. But you kind of need to get a hold of what you're spending and how you're spending and what areas. Because if you want to progress, you want to get anywhere, you want to accomplish something. I want to buy that house. I need to save up a down payment. I need to buy a car. Everyone has their needs and their wants. You have to build a buffer somewhere between the money in and that money out to play with. So yeah, that's the big equation, and it's a hard one. It's a hard one for everyone.
The banking information that you say too, Sean, the online banking. So I know with BMO online banking, I will get notifications sent to me if a bill is more than it normally is. You know, sometimes our electricity bill runs high, or the gas bill during the winter will run high. And I'll get a notification saying, hey, you're spending almost twice as much this month on this bill. You might want to look into it and make sure it's all correct, which I really appreciate, because then, yeah, I can go and log into my, Epcor or wherever I have my bills all set up to make sure that it is right. Because, I mean, not to say they read the meters wrong, but you never know. Like, absolutely. You never know what it could absolutely. Be, right?
And that's where AI really kind of helps out, because mm-hmm. AI is able to go through all your transactions very quickly,
yeah.
right? Can analyze yeah. huge amounts of data and can anticipate, right? Because okay. same thing, my online banking, it says you've probably got these bills coming in this week.
Yeah.
Make sure that you have enough cash to cover them.
Yeah. That's right.
Fantastic. These are all fantastic tools. The more sophisticated ones, stuff like Quicken, right? Where you can actually download all of your transactions into software.
Yeah.
I've had clients that come into me with those Quicken reports and they can show me 10 years worth of spending.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. Well, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. Sometimes it's worth spending the money. Like, honestly, for me, I've mostly been, well, on and off, I track through just an Excel worksheet and just, keep all my totals, have all my sheets, different months, whatever, carry them over to the next month. I mean, it works. It's okay. But the benefit of spending the money on something like Quicken is like, yeah, you don't have to do it yourself. The software will do it for you and put all that stuff into, spreadsheets for you, whereas I have to do it manually. I'm kind of old school, like, in that sense. I like to do it manually because then I'm mm-hmm. looking at it myself and then inputting the information myself. So in that sense, I guess I'm like a boomer in that sense. I just like to be a little more old school in that sense. But yeah, those softwares, you're absolutely right. They're very, very good and really detailed, really detailed.
And they're super handy. When I was kind of more in Steven's type of role, where you could deduct all kinds of expenses against your income, I used to use Quicken a lot just for tracking all of that stuff. And then at the end of year, when tax time comes, I could just hit print and get, all right, this is how much I spent on car. This is how much I spent on this, that, and the other. And do the offset. Super handy that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think also, Sean, even with tracking your expenses, it kind of comes down to, like you said, income levels is all the same. We'll have clients who have, a gross income between both of them of $200,000. And then at retirement, they say, I'm going to spend 60 grand.
Yeah.
And you're like, so you're saving 140 right now? It's like, no, we're not saving anything. It's like, where's the money going, right?
Yeah.
It's important to look at these things. And also, too, is, I was reading about, people get these online subscriptions for things and they forget about them. right? Like they've been paying for stuff they haven't looked at for years. Yeah. Or, you know, the classic, you know, sign up today for $5.99 a month, and then, you know, 6 months down the road, it's $35 and you didn't mm-hmm. even notice, right? So it's good to take a look at that, right? You know, these classic bait and switch things that are always out there. But if you don't have a clue where it's going, it's hard to save. And maybe you're looking at it and saying, oh, geez, I didn't realize I spent, you know, $150 a month on coffee at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Or more, right? Or whatever it is, right?
Skip the dishes is one that creeps in there.
Yeah, right? Or lunches, right? You're going out for lunches. Like you're going, holy smokes, I spent like, you know, $10,000 on lunches last year going out if you go all the time, right? Well, maybe there's things you can do, right?
Yeah.
It helps. And then you can prioritize which of those spending items really, like you said, are a need or a want, mm-hmm. right? Like how many different streaming services do you have? And do you really
as individuals, if you say, I really want to do this or I want to accomplish that, well, it's like, well, something has to give. There's only so much money that you're bringing in every month after taxes. And if you want to accomplish something, whatever that is for you, then something else has to come out of your spending to be able to make it. Otherwise, you're just accumulating debt.
That's right.
Yeah. And we've seen that by the statistics is gigantic in this country and is getting bigger.
Yeah.
And people also have been lulled into this sense of security that debt costs you nothing because of the, you know, the government's driving interest rates to absolutely ridiculously low levels that aren't sustainable over time, right? You know, the 2% mortgage was fantastic.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing people going, what do you mean it's 7?
Yeah.
Right. And you know, there is an entire generation out there that has never seen interest rates where they are right now. Yep. Right. And still historically, they're still at low levels because we've seen them way higher than this.
Yeah.
But there's an entire generation that's just, what do you mean that I've got interest costs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they haven't already had them.
And they've massively increased. And even when you look at variable rate mortgages, right, there's two types. One's where the payment is fixed and the other where the payment changes. But in that fixed variable rate mortgage, there are individuals who will be paying their mortgage payments. And after 3 or 4 years, their mortgage comes due and it's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
As they started with. So they've literally paid nothing down, right? And that's another important one. And people don't know this, right? You know, and then there's the other ones whose payments have, you know, doubled or more mm-hmm. because of the cost, right? And even the individuals who have fixed rates at a low interest rate right now, you better start planning because when that rolls over, it's not going to be 2%. It's going to be much, much higher, right? And then that's going to be a big piece that goes along too. So like I said, getting handles on your cash flow is absolutely huge.
Yeah. It's really important.
And you keep it through life, through all the stages of life that you have. That is one that is a consistent that you kind of need to pay attention to all the way up to retirement because it's exactly right. It's like how much you need to retire on. If you've been paying attention to your cash flows all the way through, then you've got a good idea.
Yeah.
Versus the individuals that, you know, exactly as Stephen said, it's like we've gone from 200,000 to 60, really? Let's just double check that.
Yeah.
And we're not exaggerating either. Like that happens quite often, doesn't it, Sean?
Absolutely. It's unfortunate, but it seems to happen more often than I'd care to see.
And you look on at that, it too. Sorry, Sean, but you look at it too, for those who head into retirement, when you mentioned like knowing your inflows, your outflows, having a really good handle on it. A lot of people have that really hard first few years of retirement where they just see their account going down and they're not used to it, right? So again, having a good handle on your cash flow during your working years, understanding it, understanding what's coming in, what's coming out, how to budget properly will make retirement, in my opinion, I'm not there yet. Obviously, I don't have hands-on experience, but it should make your retirement at least easier to ease into the fact that you're no longer making money. Now you have to spend the money and spend within your means.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then also, sorry to interrupt there, Sean, too, it goes the other part of it too, actually, is the closer you get to retirement, the less you're able to change that trajectory, right?
Yes.
You know, getting to be 65 and going, oh, I don't have enough money to retire.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You can't save anymore.
Yeah.
And you probably can't earn anymore.
Yeah.
So there is only one thing you can do, right? You
know, lottery tickets.
Exactly.
Well, at the beginning end of our careers, and I have seen, I have had this question a few times, especially from our younger clients, is how much should I be saving? Am I saving enough? And they feel like there's some kind of a judgment or some kind of rule of thumb around this. And it's like, well, the fact that you're not saving a whole lot in those early years is not surprising. Mm-hmm. You're trying to raise a family and you're at the beginning years of your career. So your earning capacity is at the lower end, but then you have all these expenses. Kids are not cheap.
Nope.
Running a household's not cheap. Having mortgage payments, not cheap. These are all things that are kind of adding up. So sometimes I have to kind of coach people saying, You're not going to hit it out of the park right from the get-go. You're not going to be able to save enough for retirement and the kids' education and pay all the bills and all at the same time. Sometimes you might need to sequence it and say, you know what? Why don't you focus on paying or keeping the household afloat, paying all the bills, paying down the mortgage, and then we'll start worrying about the retirement planning side of things a little later. You can only do so much at once.
Exactly. Yeah. To be a little like personal about it. So some friends of mine bought a house last year. They have very good jobs. They have very decent paying jobs. They don't have any kids right now. So right now they're just putting lump sum payments on their mortgage because they just bought the house. They want to pay it off as quickly as possible. That's what they're capable of doing at the moment. Their debt ratio is very, very low. So that's what they're going to put their money towards now. They have savings on the side, but majority will be towards their debt. And my husband and I, same thing. Our big thing right now is we have two lines of credit that we just want to completely pay off and wipe out. So we've dumbed down our savings a tiny bit, the stuff that, you know, we have to do ourselves aside from work, and everything else right now is just going into our debt so that we can just have it paid off. And you're right, it's sequencing, it's planning what's the most important that's going to get you the lot, like to where you want to be a bit faster in the long term. So for us, putting money on the debt makes more sense so that once the debt's gone, we can then convert the money we've been putting on the debt and just pump it into savings as much as we can.
Makes sense. You have to look at the interest rates that you're paying, because now we're getting into interest rates that are actually pretty comparable to decent returns on investments, which hasn't been the case for a decade.
It's been a while.
Right? So if you're saving 7.5% interest by paying down credit lines, well, that's a pretty good return, right? Mm-hmm. It makes sense now. Whereas for the past 10 years, it's like, well, why pay down something that's charging 2% when you could earn 5 or 6%? There was a disconnect there for a long time.
Yeah. And also, Sean, the other thing to keep in mind is a 7% return, less percent, you say, I have 7% mortgage or a 7% GIC. They never get the same, but let's pretend they are.
Yeah.
But you have to look at those from a taxable perspective. They're very different returns, right? Mm-hmm. So if you make 7% return on a GIC, that's interest income. So you're paying all of that at your marginal tax rate. So let's say you're at, 35% tax rate. You're paying, $2,200, $2,300 in tax on that. Flip it around. That 7% mortgage, you need to make 7% after tax rate of return, right? So like for you to pay that mortgage down at your job, let's flip it around again. You have to make kind of like 10% because you've got pay taxes on your job. And then also too, that's a 7% guaranteed rate of return after tax. Yeah. And, as much as I'd like to say we do that every day, we don't, but no one does, right? There is no, 7% guaranteed after tax rate of return. So now that whole story of debt, which is the next question that comes up, credit versus debt and different types of credit and the credit ratings and mortgage and interest rates and deductibility all comes in there, but it makes a difference now. Like before, like you said, when interest rates were at zero and you could get 2% and, 5, 6, 7% on the investments, it wasn't a choice. Mm-hmm. Now it is, And I just had that conversation with a lady who is selling a condo. And she's like, well, maybe I'll invest it. I'm like, no, your mortgage is coming up on your house and it's going to be 7 or 8%. And, your cash flow isn't huge. Like, that's where the money's going.
Yeah.
Like I never thought of that, right? Because we've been programmed to thinking debt is actually good to have because it doesn't cost you anything.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, guess what? The day of reckoning is unfortunately coming, and it's coming quickly.
Yeah.
So getting to that, you know, can we go over the different types of credit and, you know, mortgage types, interest rates, and what's deductible and not deductible? And big question of when is debt good and when is it bad in planning?
The thing to pay attention on any, when we're looking at credit is that interest rate, right? So credit cards, seriously nasty business. They're charging 21, 22%. Yes, there are some low interest ones out there. You got to hunt for them. But 21, you don't want to be carrying large balances on credit cards. That's just deadly.
Yeah.
Next one down are credit lines, right? Loans and credit lines. I'm kind of putting them both together. They have similar rates of return or a similar interest rates, not rates of return. Loans are kind of just, you know, you're fixed in, you're going to have it paid off. And so it could be a car loan or something of that nature. You've got those fixed payments and then they're gone. Credit lines are kind of a little more open-ended and they require a lot more discipline. That said, super valuable tools. So often I would suggest to people, it's like, well, if you're going to carry consumer debt, use the credit line to pay off the credit card and at least save yourself that differential in interest, because there's like a 10% different interest rate between those two. But yeah, carrying a credit card balance, not a good idea. Credit line balance, you need the discipline to pay it down, because it's very easy to fall into the trap of just paying the interest, and that balance never goes down.
Yeah.
So super handy if an unexpected expense comes up, super handy, but you need the discipline to pay that off.
And it should really be viewed as, like you said, the credit card that you pay off every month. Like, you don't really want to have the line outstanding anymore. Like I said, once again, 2%, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
7%, bigger problem.
Exactly. Absolutely. The credit lines that are the cheapest are the ones that are actually secured with homes. So there are, all the banks have them now are these mortgages tied to a credit line, and you're using your home as collateral. Those ones are the cheapest, right? Because now they're at prime plus, say, 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. So those ones are the cheapest.
That's
and then
still 7%.
Exactly, right?
It's still high.
It's still high. Like, everyone needs to get used to that idea. Because everyone's like, and that's what, going back to the cash flows, it's like everyone needs to take a look at those cash flows, because your bills, your groceries, your interest costs, everything has crept up quite rapidly over the past 12 months. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that are going to get surprised going, huh, wait a minute. I used to have extra cash there and now I don't. Where did it all go? Oh, myself included, right?
Yeah.
And then the category where we have the largest amount of debt is typically mortgages, right? Where we have these huge, and people have become kind of immune to carrying, you know, these hundreds of thousands of dollars of mortgage. For years, they were cheap, and it's part of the reason why the house prices kind of skyrocketed was cheap credit. So borrowing $800,000 to buy a house suddenly was somehow
affordable.
Yeah, it was possible. Whereas now, a lot of people are going, I don't even qualify for an $800,000 mortgage with the current interest rate environment. Like, the payments are just ridiculous. So on the mortgage side of things, we have the fixed rates, we have the variable rates. A lot of people love the variable rates for years because they were so cheap, right? You were taking the risk, not the bank. So the variable rate mortgages were at prime minus. And when prime was like 3% and it was prime minus a half or prime minus one, suddenly you've got a 2% mortgage.
Yep.
That was insanely cheap. The downside with those variable rate mortgages is that they float with prime, and prime has shot up. So now all these people are now feeling the pain on a month-to-month basis because they're getting their payments reset. Because the interest has climbed so much that the banks are actually coming back to them going, you have to reset your payments because you're actually not even covering the interest portion with your payment. And you need to be paying down principal too. Yeah. So they're actually resetting them. Flip side, the fixed mortgages. So the people that lock into terms. And I wish we had the U.S. system.
Oh, I know. You never have to change it.
No, they don't get terms. You got a 25-year mortgage. You're fixed. Your interest rate was fixed for 25 years.
I wish.
Yeah. We renew, and those renewal dates come up, and it becomes a game. It's the Canadian pastime. It's, should I renew for a 3-year? Should I renew for a 4-year or 5-year? Are interest rates going down? Are they going up? It's like, this is the topic of conversation at Tim Hortons now, is what to do with your mortgages and the interest rates. That's a game in and of itself.
Do you think that we'll see, as the renewal dates start coming up, I don't think we'll get as bad as the States with their 2008 financial crisis, but do you think that we're going to see a big surge of like foreclosed homes, repossessed homes, people that can't afford things? Because like, just for me, for example, so I have a condo that I bought almost a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And so I'm having to resign it in 2024. I'm pretty sure I'll be resigning for like at least 6 or 7% for the mortgage. So my payment, it won't go down. It will most likely go up a tiny bit, even though I'm now going into my third term of my mortgage. So, you know, for people who aren't in a very fortunate position like myself, are going to resign these mortgages and say like, oh my God, I can't afford it. Do you think that that could be, especially when mortgages were so low, when the rates were so low, and like you said, people were taking out $800,000 mortgages because it was like nothing to them. Now we're going to see this resigning at 7, 8, I mean, God forbid, 9 or 10% next year, maybe in the next few years. Are we going to see people say like, I can't afford it. Take my house, take it back.
There's going to be a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. The banks are obviously adjusting their loan loss provisions to kind of, they're anticipating that there's going to be a little bit of this. That said, I see people maybe taking the equity out of their homes and consolidating debt as those terms start to renew. That's mm-hmm. one option. The second option is, and the fact is the housing market is still pretty tight, right? We're still seeing in the news that we don't have enough houses. People want houses. Worst case scenario is you're going to be forced into a situation where you might have to sell and downsize, okay. or yeah. say move out of the city, or look at something a little bit cheaper just to give yourself the wiggle room. So to say that people are going to be, the only time that you really see people default is when suddenly unemployment ratchets up and people actually mm-hmm. lose their jobs and they can't make payments at all. Right. But this is a slow moving train. This is pain, but it's slow moving enough. And that's what we want, because if it was too fast, then yeah, we'd be heading straight into a recession really, really fast. And that's not good for anyone.
No.
So if it's a slow enough moving train that people just adjust progressively. Okay. So I could see people saying, okay, I'm going to sell the $800,000 house and I'm going to move into a $500,000 house and bring my mortgage down that way. Okay.
Okay. So slow and torture. Slow torture.
The other thing you talked about, Sean, too, which is a thing that a lot of people didn't really think about, is because mortgages were cheap, a lot of people didn't pay them down. So, you know, back in the day, you know, speaking like an old fart, which I'm not quite there, but close enough, you know, very few people in their 50s had mortgages, right? They paid them down when interest rates were 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, keep on going all the way to 20. You paid that thing down. So people were coming into retirement debt free.
Yeah.
Nowadays, there's a ton of people going into retirement with $500,000-$700,000 mortgages.
I agree.
And now they get to this position where their income isn't going up, their daily expenses are going up, and now they've got this big mortgage they have to pay, and they don't have the income. So those, like you said, those are going to be the guys that are going to have to downsize. And so, like you said, Ashley, if there's probably a group of houses that might become, you know, much cheaper, it's probably in that $8 to $1 million.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people who overspent, you know, the $1.5 million, $2 million houses probably not, because those people have boatloads of money and they don't even notice, right? Yeah. And then, like you said, the 300 to 500, probably not, because there'll be the downsizing guys coming mm-hmm. in to fill that void. And a lot of people who buy a $300,000 house or a $400,000 house most likely weren't the ones who were extending themselves.
Yeah.
It's probably in that, you know, like I said, that 7 to 9 is really going to be the bubble window.
Oh God, that raises my anxiety. Like just talking about it, just hearing that number for a mortgage, is my heart races and my palms get sweaty.
There are a lot of people, I'm going to say the Gen Xers are notorious for this, where mm-hmm. they just kept growing into their cash flow. Their,
yes.
As they kept getting raises and working, they just took on more and more debt. Because they could afford more and more debt, and it was cheap. It didn't really seem to. So it was keeping up with the Joneses. They're the ones that are going to. They're the ones that are getting a bit of a rude awakening, because mm-hmm. that's exactly it. Now they're getting into their 50s, and ouch, right?
Now they got to push retirement back. Well, maybe I can work until I'm 80. I'll be fine.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. It's like, yeah, we're going to have to postpone retirement because this isn't going to work for me.
Yeah. Really quickly, Sean, I had one question. And I didn't give you any pre-prepping for this question. So if you can't Uh-oh. Answer it because of reasons, that's totally understandable.
All right.
Okay. So let's look at the merging of debts. So you have two people. You know, you have husband, wife, husband, whoever, couple.
Yep.
One comes into the relationship, let's say, with like $20,000 worth of debt. They've almost paid off all their student loans. They haven't bought a house yet. They just have like one car that's almost paid off. Then they have other partner who, let's say, went to law school or med school, and then they bought a nice big car and they bought all this other stuff. And they're coming in with a couple tens, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. When you have those situations where people are combining their household incomes and their debts, do you have any kind of specific recommendations as to how it should be paid down or who should pay it down? If someone comes in with an Audi or, you know, a Bentley or something, and they've got $100,000 vehicle, you know, that they're paying, do you recommend that both of them combine income so that you can pay it all down faster? Is there anything to that, I guess,
gotcha.
Combining your debts?
All right. So first, you need to address, it's not a really even a financial issue at this point, is we've got two people with very different lifestyle mm-hmm. or outlook on spending now versus, like, some people are just naturally more frugal than others. So it sounds like we've got two different people with two different kind of expectations around life and lifestyle. Now, carrying debt, you brought on an interesting point where you said, They're bringing in a large amount of debt because of their education.
Right.
Well, that would be one of those times where that kind of debt could actually be good. Buying the Audi, not necessarily, but getting your MBA can be, right? Because it translates to years and years and years worth of additional income. Right, the MBA schools are great for touting their statistics of saying, you know, you pay this much for our education, but it translates to an extra starting, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 per year, and it starts going up from there. Okay, that translates into a financial plan quite well.
Okay,
well, just like medicals, right? Being a doctor, taking Absolutely. On that debt.
Yeah,
another thing actually that you mentioned. You made a huge assumption that some people, before they get together, do, and that's talk about the finances, right? Like hear about these people. It's like, oh, I'm getting married to my partner, and I just found out they have $300,000 in debt, right?
Yeah.
Like that financial planning conversation before you're getting together in whatever way, shape, or form you want to call it, married, you know, cohabitating, whatever, is huge. Like you made the assumption that these people made that had that discussion, and a lot of times they don't. Like literally, you know, proposed going through the wedding, and it's like, what do you mean you've got that amount of debt, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That kind of compatibility is something that people that are getting together need to have that conversation, and you need to have that conversation all the way through through life. So yes. I'm going to give you a couple of examples. One is young people getting together for the first time, right? Their outlook on their finances, that's one thing. What if it's second marriage? Now we've got blended family. Mm-hmm. And now we've got debts and we've got some baggage there. All right, that's complicated. And you need to have that heart to heart of, okay, are we on the same page financially? And then take it out to, say, retirement age. The number of times I've had conversations with people where, okay, financially they could retire, but husband and wife or the spouses have very different ideas of how they were going to spend retirement.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not spending all my day. Like, I've heard of wives saying, I'm not golfing every day. I'm sorry. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
Right? These kinds of conversations, it's not necessarily money, but it translates into money. Is what are your expectations and outlook on these things? Huge, right? These are huge topics right there.
And also the second marriage thing is, what are your expectations in regards to how much money you're going to give the kids?
Yeah,
you know, we have examples where, you know,
absolutely.
Second marriages, you know, person one says, you know what? These kids need to look after themselves, get a job, get going, you know, can't sit on the couch forever. And the other one's like, yeah, but, you know, Billy's had some trouble and, you know, maybe we should just like look at letting them stay at the house for nothing. And yeah, they've got an education, but they don't need to get a job. We'll just look after it. Right.
Yeah.
And you would have that in line because there's going to be some problems.
You better have the money to have that trust fund baby.
Yeah,
you can't have a trust. You can't be a trust fund baby without a trust fund.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the bank of mom and dad, right? Yeah. It's the good old bank of mom and dad, and yeah, some people are a little more generous with the purse strings than others, and that's a compatibility thing.
It's interesting too, because so like my husband and I come from slightly different backgrounds in the way of money. My parents, though we don't never had a lot, they did what they could to try to help me at least to get my first car. They were able to help me a bit to get my first home. Whereas my husband, he's like, oh no, I worked for everything. I didn't really get much from my parents. So now,
well, that's why your kids are working at the sweatshop, right?
Yeah. But that's the thing. That's the thing now is that we have these two.
You got your
children.
6-year-old tool
making mugs.
Home Depot. Making mugs.
That's right. They have their own YouTube channels. You know, they got to pull in the income. Yeah.
Cutting grass at 5 years old. That's good.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, we have had to absolutely make adjustments, because for me, I was like, oh, what is it to give them, you know, their first vehicle? What is it to help them with the house? What is it for this? And like initially my husband will look at me and be like, no, they will earn everything on their own just like I did. But now as we see the world changing, money changing, and the way that we're supporting our children changing, we're both making these little adjustments and changes to be like, okay, maybe not buy an entire car for them, but at least help them with the down payment. Like, you know, maybe not buy their home, but pump up their RESPs and maybe start a savings account for them just so that they can have a small leg up, you know, as they get older. So you're right. It's everything's constantly changing and having those conversations, because you never know when your opinions are going to change.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. I've encountered some families where when it comes to kids, I've seen some business owners say that they're not helping their kids out at all, wholesale, like just not even helping them out. They said they need to get a work ethic.
Oh.
Right. And they were very successful business owners. And they said the kids are not getting it. They need to get the work ethic up front before I start gifting anything. All right. And then the flip side is I've got other clients that are very high income earners. They don't necessarily have the wealth built up yet, but they're very high income earners, and they're helping the kids out with vehicles and paying for insurance and so on. And the logic behind it was, I didn't want to have to be driving them everywhere.
That's right.
It's like they were living a little further out. They were a little more, I'm not going to say rural, but public transit was not.
Oh, because I was going to say, have you ever heard of a bus pass?
Yeah, exactly. So they're living a little further out, and you know, the kids have their vehicles, and mom and dad are paying for the insurance for these kids. Now, kids insurance in Alberta for kids like 16, 17-year-olds is incredibly expensive compared to other provinces. So I thought that was kind of interesting because I'm looking at it in the budget, in their budget, saying, okay, so how much of the budget is going to disappear when the kids eventually leave home?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How much was them, right? And that's why we have that kind of conversation.
They're never going to leave home.
Yeah. Right? That was too nice. It's too nice of a lifestyle. It's like, why would I leave?
Exactly. That's when you have to start threatening the changing of the diapers to be like, well, I'm just like, my bladder is failing, so you better start changing my butt. I'll get to leave mighty fast.
I think we'll call it a day on that one, actually.
Don't want to talk about adult diapers on this episode? Okay. Save it for later.
That's retirement lifestyle.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Oh my gosh. Well, and so again, I'm so glad I put that disclaimer at the beginning of the episode because we're at like 40 some odd minutes now. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes we like to go over a little bit, but you know, it was another great round of questions and answers, in my opinion. I mean, you know, we talk about the benefit of having, instead of just your app, just your software, having an actual wealth professional, a planning professional with you, someone who has the education. And this is exactly why I'm sure that some people who have listened have been like, I never thought of this. I never thought of that. That's a good point. Why didn't I think of that in my own plan? It helps to have somebody there beside you to talk through these things so that you can all come to some understanding with all of this. And when you have someone with the education, it's even better. So, you know, Sean, you're so great to have around bringing all of this stuff to the light for us. So we really appreciate it.
Glad to be of help.
Now, even when you feel like you've got a handle on your finances and wealth, it never hurts to get a second opinion on your money, you know, especially with today's economic situations, with families, with interest rates and everything like that. Talking with a professional, you could find a little extra money floating around somewhere. You never know. And we could all use a little extra money nowadays. So next month, we're going to begin diving into a little bit more on the investment side of financial planning. This will be the episode where Stephen will just get to chat about everything that he likes. So everyone, get your coffee ready next month, get caffeinated, make sure you have a good rest the night before, because I'm sure we'll have a lot to discuss. But Stephen, Sean, thank you so much, you guys, for today's chat. This has been really another eye-opener, I think, for a lot of people it will be. And we just really appreciate you guys just taking the time to do these episodes. I think that they're really great.
Welcome. And you know, it's important, right? Because it's the whole picture. And that's what we always talk about, the whole picture.
Exactly.
And, you know, the old adage we always say to everyone, you know, money is just a tool, right? It's a tool to help you live a better retirement,
exactly,
better relationship with families. It's just a tool. And how do you use that tool, right?
That's
money
right.
in itself is useless, right? But I do think from a planning perspective, just to close here, is we're having more discussions around now, what do I do with the money as an opposed to I have the money to invest.
Yes.
Like I said, literally this morning, just before this, I had a conversation with someone who is selling a condo. And initially it was, I need to invest in this. And I'm like, no, I don't think so, because you have a mortgage that's going to be coming up. We'll see what the rate is and we'll make that decision then.
Yeah. Right?
In the old days, right. It was easy. It's like, sell the house, give us the money. Bob's your uncle, done. Right? Yeah. Easy peasy, because there was no issues.
Yeah.
Now there's going to be, I think, that issue of debt. You've got to look at the debt. And
absolutely,
the debt's becoming bigger and bigger. And, you know, I don't think, you know, from our perspective, we don't think interest rates are going to come down to those levels again.
No.
Like it's, you just look out there, inflation's going to be around.
Yeah.
Just look, you're going to probably see more strikes across Canada than we've seen in years. You know, if you listen to the speech from the new guy who's running the UAW, the United Auto Workers, man, like that whole difference between the guys who run the show and the guys who run the shop, right? He says, you know, whatever her name is, a lady who runs one of the auto companies is making 385 times the average worker's salary.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Auto workers make good dough, right? So like he's just basically saying no more corruption, no more concessions, no more of this politicking. Like we are negotiating hard.
Yeah.
And you know, look what happened in the airlines.
Mm-hmm.
Air Canada. Yeah. Air Canada's coming up. They're going to get more. So I think it's workers are going to get more money, and that is all inflationary.
Yeah,
so, you know,
right.
Waiting for that 2% mortgage again, I think I'll be dead before that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'll be working anymore by that point, at the very least.
And that's an issue, right? It's like people have to start considering debt again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking of it as a friend, it's more of a foe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. So, and again, another great reason to have professionals by your side so that you can make those decisions and you can make informed decisions.
And also
like
another
that.
Thing, it gets down to, like we always talk about with financial planning, what do you have? What are you spending? Right? Like, look at what you have outstanding. Oh, I've got 3 credit cards and I don't pay them off. Or, you know,
carry
why
balance.
Not have one
have
credit
points.
Card? You know, I've got a lot. Like, there's just, you need to know where you are to take that snapshot in time. And that's if you don't know where you are, you know, you don't know where you're going or how to get there. It's that simple. Like, as we talked about in earlier episodes, you know, you're going from A to B. How do you get there? But you have to know where you are.
That's right.
And Sean, you can attest how many times do you meet with people and they don't have a clue what they have.
No, absolutely.
Like, no, we're not talking, you know, saying people with low incomes or low savings. In fact, a lot of those individuals have a way better understanding of where things are. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
It's a lot of the higher income individuals. Well, you know, family income's $250,000, $300,000. What do you get spent? Oh, no.
Yeah. I have my butler. My butler deals with all that stuff.
Well, it was kind of there. Like, if you're making that amount, they just don't look at it, right? I don't know. I think we've got this. I don't know. Right?
Exactly.
So it's there. So anyway, that's all I got.
Are you sure? Are you done?
Wait. Yeah, I'm done. Till next month.
Till next month. Exactly. Next month. Like I said, that you guys are all just getting a teaser now. So get ready. Get ready for next month. Stephen, I'm sure, is going to have lots to share with Sean. It's going to be a great show. We hope that you'll all come back for it. And until then, we will chat with you next time and just enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks.